Welcome to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast that explores the creative and curious world of work through monologues and conversations with artists, creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, and change makers. Why not poetry? According to today's guest, the power of a poem is in its brevity, the ability to focus and precisely say what needs to be said. In her words, Ashanti Anderson is a poet, playwright, screenwriter, and occasional essayist. Starting with a reading from her debut short poetry collection, Black Under, Ashanti brings us onto common ground. From there, we talk about her quest for creative self-discovery, how she found poetry, and the visual nature of crafting poems. I hope this conversation opens you to new avenues of creative exploration and limitless possibilities. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/581.
Answer to an earnest prayer. True, I don't make mistakes. But I was trapped in a man's body 33 years. And I killed myself. Signed, God.
Whew. I felt that poem when I read it, and I feel it when I hear it. And it's so short and so profound. And the note that I wrote down was empathy at the level of God. What are you endlessly curious about?
Honestly, why people hate. I think that a lot of my work like indirectly questions that, like, why do you have such a dislike towards a person or a group of people when we can all relate to each other on a very significant level? That's something that's always perplexed me for as long as I've known that I was Black, honestly. It always seemed like such a strange thing to me. Even as a child, you know, when I was first learning what being Black was, I looked at my hand, the skin on my hand, and then I turned my hand over and I said, but everybody's palm is white, so why does one piece of skin matter more than another? Like, this has always been such a fascination of mine. And if I could figure out the answer to that, honestly, I would have reached that, like, self-actualization on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, honestly.
There isn't a bigger question than that, is there?
I don't think so. I've given myself a basically insurmountable challenge, but one that definitely provides an infinite well of creative inspiration. Because there really is, there's so much in between these two ends of the spectrum. And that's any spectrum, Black, white, gay, straight, disabled, able-bodied. Like, there's so much territory in the middle that so many people could connect on and share. And it's just like, okay, like, what about this example? What about this example? Like, oh, with answer to an earnest prayer, it's like, well, you like God, right? You trust God's opinion. I can relate to that. Can I appeal to you that way? Like, what if God had this opinion of it? Would that make a difference to you then? You know, so I pretty much never run out of things to say. And that's what's so ironic about hate. There's so many reasons not to, that it becomes pretty, it feels, you know, intentionally stubborn sometimes to insist upon it. But here's where we are in America, and in many ways, you know, around the entire world.
So one of the things that I'm curious about, Ashanti, is where does your poetry and writing journey begin?
Honestly, as soon as I learned to read or learned to write, I'm sure that came a little after, but once I could form sentences, my destiny was pretty much locked in, whether I realized it or not. This was going to be a thing that I was doing for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And that's very obvious, I think, looking back on my life. And even going back to the questions before, like, and this is why I know this to be true about myself, because I have memories of me not just writing, you know. I didn't really write stories I think a child should have written, you know, like very, you know, nice. I was also, you know, writing, you know, about these differences between specifically racially at the time. And this was like second, third grade that I can remember grappling with this in writing. So, you know, I think that's always been a part of me. But, you know, I have a very nice parents who did the thing that was common. I think a lot of millennials probably have heard this, which is that you can do anything that you want to or that you set your mind to. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful sentiment, and I do appreciate it. But that also, for me, was, I think, my get out of jail free card for doing anything under the sun or like embarking on any path that I could, because, well, I'll be great at anything I do, right? So like, let's, you know, try to be a cardiologist. Well, what about law? Well, what about what about owning a mortuary? Like, literally every 2 weeks I was like researching in depth, like, how do I embark upon this career?
Wow.
And then I went to college and was like, I don't know what I actually want to do, so I guess I'll just get a psychology degree. That seems like something you could talk your way into getting a job in any field. That's how I thought about it at the time. I was like, I can make this work no matter what I choose. Yeah. And so, you know, I was going that direction for a while, and then the creative writing classes, I think, made me re-recognize that was something that I had always been interested in but didn't really make time for. And that's awesome. I think that's what college is supposed to be. Like, that's why you pay so much for it, right? Like, because otherwise you kind of just, you were kind of just scammed, right? But when you have those moments where you realize, like, oh, like, I'm sitting in this class and I realize, like, this is the thing that I need to devote my time and attention towards. Like, I would pay a lot for that, I think. you know, like, so a lot of us are, right? So I hope that that's what everyone gets. And that was for me, you know, I was like, oh yeah, this is that thing. This is that thing. So I'm going to go and get an MFA now, because I'm still, you know, testing it out, trying to see how I feel about it. So it's like, depending on how you look at it. Well, I guess in either case, my writing career got started kind of early, as in young, I guess, at least for someone who's not into spoken word. I think they may get introduced to it and start performing and things a little earlier. But once I started really focusing on writing poetry, things just started moving for me really quickly, and that was nice. I still feel very early in my career. Not many years have passed since I realized I wanted to be a poet specifically, but I've been writing in some capacity for what feels like almost my entire life.
Yeah. What was it about poetry that really gave you the foundation for wrestling with these big questions?
typically in contemporary poetry anyway, the brevity as far as both length and as far as, you know, the story that's being told. Like, it's more concise in several different capacities, and that's, it allowed me to focus. Because I do write other genres, plays, screenplays. The problem that I often have, honestly, is that it's so easy to get distracted by so many other things. It's like, well, I want to talk about this, but then this character also has this issue, which should definitely be mentioned. You can't just kind of throw that in there without talking about it. And then, well, why did they have that? Well, because their parents have this going on. See, and it's and I just get too, like, too much starts happening. And like, poetry is definitely like, no, reel it in. Like, nobody's going to read all that. Say what you need to say, and say it well, and go to the next one. And that's really, really helpful. I can't overstate how helpful it is to feel that kind of restraint. Like, and I don't mean that negatively at all, but like, everything doesn't have to be a story per se. In fact, you know, like, we move through life, and most of what we see of people's lives, honestly, whether we know them well or not, are just snapshots, right? Like, not everything is an entire story. So, you know, that helps too. I don't have to fill in, you know, a person's entire background, or let you know after the poem their entire future. I'm whatever has led up to this point right now can be essentially imagined by the reader. And I think that also helps with empathy.
Yeah.
If you don't know all the differences you have with someone, you focus more on what you have in common. So poetry is just really helpful for all of those things.
What a beautiful description, I think, of poetry as well, because for a lot of people, it's the, oh, well, if you want to make money, why are you a poet? And so we often equate poetry with like consumerism and capitalism. But I just love this notion that it really is the quickest way to connect and tell a story. I love that.
I definitely appreciate, I think, that poets make the least money. Or maybe I'm just telling on myself. I make the least money. I don't have any problem admitting it. but that's okay in a sense, because money, like, you get paid to, you're either doing something or someone is endorsing you. And in either case, that can turn into all types of things, you know. For example, like, I think a common issue, or I won't say common issue, I'll say a popular kind of topic or discourse that I've heard more than a few times in fiction is this idea of own voices, you know, that the characters should be written by authors who also represent those backgrounds. And that's something that I don't experience a lot of in poetry. There are some, right? Like, there's definitely a few that I can think of, but by and large, you know, we're not getting advances. We're not at some point, you know, a publisher will be like, I'll take the next book. I don't care how it turns out. But up until then, you're, you know, trying to find a home, or, you know, using those relationships that you have, like, what about publishing this? You know, you're submitting to contest, like, trying to get someone to care as much about this as you did. But that's all kind of after the fact. You know, you've said what you had to say. You know, if you can be right, you can be swept up by other folks' expectations, for sure. But to a large degree, you know, it's what you want, at least, you know, when you first start sending it out. And even editors aren't really changing the work substantially like that. They wouldn't have taken it on if they felt like it needed that, right? So, yeah. So yeah, I just think it helps uphold the integrity of the genre. And of course, that's not to say that it's not without any errors or, you know, issues or anything like that, but it helps me feel free. Like, it's nice to joke about it. Like, ha ha ha, I won't make any money. That frees me up at least a little from worrying about, you know, is someone going to take this? Is this even viable? You can focus on, you know, the craft and the level of writing and the technique that you want to use rather than necessarily focusing on what people necessarily want to read, which can be a big issue for a lot of other genres, I think. No shade.
How does the relationship between poet and reader change when money is, or freedom is present in the situation?
Well, for one, you don't have to do what they say, right? If someone comes up to me and they tell me they don't like a poem because it's offensive or it wasn't, you know, it didn't pander enough to the white gaze or something, I can, you know, nod and say, okay, like, you should try writing your own poem. And I leave it at that, you know, and I don't have to, you know, necessarily, I don't have to think about that at all, right? Versus I wonder with other genres, and even I think just writing in general, sometimes it can feel like, well, if I write this, will it have a certain response? And then that could jeopardize, you know, my reputation, or can I do this thing ever again, you know? And it can be hard. You want to, if you're getting paid, and this is something my psychology degree, I learned for this degree, right? So told you it'll come in handy anywhere. So yeah. There's a study that shows that if you give someone $5 for doing nothing, and you give, like, let's say 100 people walk past you and you give 50 folks $5 for no reason, just out of kindness of your heart. And then you tell the other 50 people, if you, I don't know, do anything, just I'll come up with something, I guess. If you take this flyer and, you know, post it somewhere and take a picture and come back, I'll give you $5. The people who worked for the money will actually feel better about having received it. So I feel like that can potentially happen when you get paid, or you know you're getting paid substantially for things. You inherently want to do a good job, however that is defined by the people paying you. Because you might feel worse for having not done that. And yeah, it's just a lot of, you know, we live in a capitalist society, right? So there's just going to be a lot of problems inherent in that. And I'm not saying that poetry is anti-capitalist by any means, but it helps to at least be able to, you know, humor myself and say, well, it's not like I'm getting paid for this, so I can do whatever I want.
But I think what I like about it, though, is it does, I think, prepare you to really care about your art in a way that maybe other more commercial crafts don't necessarily, I think, prepare people for.
And I think that's also not just a money thing, but just, I think poetry, at least it feels to me, very, very intimate. I'm spending a lot of time focusing on a very short amount of words. You get, you know, really close with your own work and yourself and your interests and your habits. And it's just a kind of self-awareness that then turns into what I think is, you know, the true skill of writing. Knowing, not just doing really impressive things with craft, but having that self-awareness and knowing what you are doing and thus knowing how and when to manipulate it for its maximum effect. And I think that that's something that shorter works really provide that also may not be as present all the time in larger, especially, you know, commercially, you know, ones that were focused on selling, you know, and I'm not trying to diss anybody, you know, because I don't know anyone's writing process. I'm honestly only speaking on how it's felt to me as someone who's written in every genre in my quest to creative self-discovery. And I've tried writing novels and I'm like, oh, this doesn't quite feel right for me. What about plays? And plays definitely have their uses. And, you know, I enjoy making use of that. But definitely when it comes down to, like, I need to hone a writing skill or I need to really take time and focus more on the craft and the content, it's like poetry is training camp for me. It's like, okay, like I want to make sure that my writing in general sounds good. So I make sure that I'm regularly revisiting poetry because poetry is the place where I learn how to do that.
So your new chapbook is called Black Under. And, you know, since you're writing a collection of poems that are as short as you can possibly make them without losing their effectiveness, what goes into the writing process? Because, I mean, you probably have to write a lot of words to uncover which words are correct.
Yeah, I actually do more moving words than writing them. Ooh. I think I definitely have written and erased quite a bit from these poems, but more than that, I spend a lot of time inspecting the poem visually. Like there's a way that I'm okay with them looking. I think it actually serves the poem and not just, you know, carries the words. I was like, oh, well, this is where this ends up. So I don't like that. I actually try to make my poems look a certain way visually on purpose, sometimes subtly, sometimes not so subtly. And yeah, even when, you know, it came down to the size of the book and what are the dimensions and are these poems still going to look the way that I want them to? That's something that's actually really, really important to me. And it also, I think, helps me cut down on the number of words I end up using or recycling.
Oh, interesting.
Because when I know a line is going to stop at a certain point or a poem is going to be a certain length, I have to make those decisions more immediately rather than write out everything that's on your mind and then cut it later. So I save myself a bit of time that way. That's just how I found for it to be useful for me.
I find that very interesting too, because that is sometimes for me the frustrating part about poetry is like the visual component to it. But I love the intention behind it.
Yeah, I think it can be, it would be more difficult for me if it came after, I think, because that requires you to basically stuff the poem in a corset sometimes, or you end up trying to stretch it out so it'll reach, you know, a certain number of stanzas or so forth, and kind of eyeing the poem as it goes and seeing what type of shape it's starting to take on its own, and then either, you know, redirecting that gently or just tidying it up, you know, making it look more intentional, you know, switching words or the order of words so that I maintain this kind of form. Definitely by far is easier than going after the fact and looking at the poem and saying, now what am I going to do with this? And I don't think I wouldn't be as intentional, right? If I were to do it afterwards, it would be impossible for me.
When you're moving words, which I love that description, do you have like a yellow pad of paper? You know, are you like writing poetry on a whiteboard? Like what does that look like for you?
Literally just a Word document. I don't even save words. If you're deleted, you're gone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard at this training camp. It is rough. I just don't want to hold on to things that don't serve me. Now, I will move things down. Like if I write something and I'm like, this is good, but it's not ready. The poem's not ready yet. You know, I'll scoot it down and make that space and fill in before that. But yeah, once I've decided I don't have a use for a line, I let it go because I don't want to get hung up and end up trying to squeeze lines or images in there that don't belong and I just hold some sort of sentimental value towards them because I came up with them, and it just ends up kind of dragging the poem down unintentionally. So once I've made that decision, it's gone. I don't keep revisions. That's actually made it a little difficult to have some craft talks because folks like to see revisions. They like to see where the poem was before and where it ended up. And I'm like, why? Why? I don't know. I'm an overthinker in my general everyday life. I do not have the mental capacity to also hold on to old versions of the exact same poem as the one that I published. I don't. Yeah, I save things to the cloud. It's always the latest version. I don't even think about them. I don't have problems throwing away whole ideas after like halfway or even all the way through like planning. And this is for all genres at this point, like whole screenplay treatments. And I'm like, I don't have use for this anymore. And I just let it go. And I think that helps me to not get, like I mentioned, like held up on something that instinctively I feel isn't going anywhere. And that's okay. Like there's so many things, like I could see that in someone else's book. That could be a poem for someone else or a movie to be made by someone else or a play to be written by someone else. And I think that's great. I think that, you know, you should write what you need to and then let other people share the wealth, share the ideas, you know, let other people grab onto those if, you know, it's not actually going to be fully, you know, realized by you. And I try to just be honest with myself about that.
There's so much power in what you just said about letting go of what doesn't work for you, writing what you need to, as opposed to just writing what you know. And I really like that pursuit of craft, of just learning how to let things go. My mind is blown by
it. Yeah, it's got to be sort of a life philosophy, right? Yes. Because we have troubles letting go with a lot of things in our lives, not just our revisions or our witty phrases. But yeah, just it's okay. It's okay. The scarcity that we've been told exists doesn't really exist. You know, that's a whole nother thing with capitalism that we don't have to get into. But especially when it comes to creative work, there's no limit. You're not going to run out of ideas. You're not going to run out of poems. You may choose not to write them, you know, but inspiration is everywhere. And if you get tied up with one thing that isn't really serving you and you aren't really serving it, and you miss, you know, the other things that are out there trying to call your attention. You know, at the same time, I admit that my writing philosophy does have its drawbacks for sure. I am definitely a person who jumps from idea to idea. I have trouble completing things because I'm like, this isn't working. I want to do something else. But when I do realize like this is it, I'm happy with this. We made it all the way through together. We're still holding on to each other. I'm really, 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 really happy with what I end up with, and I think that's more valuable to me by far than writing a ton and publishing a ton. And I wanted to be a person who did that. I did for a long time. I wanted to be essentially prolific. I used to, when I was younger, I even kind of subconsciously referred to myself as like the Black woman Ben Franklin. Don't judge me. I had it's public education, y'all. Okay. I only knew what they told me. Okay. And what I knew was he did a whole bunch of shit, and he was known for doing all of those things. It's like, Ben came out with an almanac this year. Oh, didn't he just discover electricity or something? Yep. Well, what's he doing now? I don't know. Talking to some presidents, probably. People think he is one. He hangs out with them so much. So, you know, it's like, I was like, I want that kind of life. and you know, I had to realize, like, that's just not the person you are. You're going to work on 20 different projects and only publish one of them probably every 10 years. That's okay. And I'm sure I'm exaggerating. I hope to God I am, because I would like some some kind of balance, right? But just to put it out there as an exaggeration, because, you know, that very well could end up happening. And at the end of the day, I still have to be happy with what is out there. Even when I was in my MFA program, I said, you know, I'm going to write these poems. We have to finish with a thesis. I'm just going to send my thesis out. Like, this will have made my time here worth it. I will come out with a book. I will get it published. So Black Under came out 3 years post MFA and is about one third of the size. So that's just an example of a shift in priorities, right? And I honestly am, when I look at that full manuscript and I look at Black Under, I am so much happier with what ended up out here in the world. And that required letting go of a lot, because I wrote a lot, and I wrote it during some very trying times for me, you know, and that's a lot to let go of, but, you know, that's okay too. And there's closure in that, in just letting go.
How have you learned to make peace with the things that you'll never be, the things that you no longer want to be, and the things that you are?
Honestly, I watch BoJack Horseman.
Yes.
Yes. I wish I could give a more like intelligent philosophical answer, but like, no, I just saw that sad horse and I'm like, he is famous. He has people around him who loves him. He, you know, he's doing great. Like, people recognize him on the street. He's, you know, I'm like, these are things that at one point in time, I, you know, at least dreamed about. I know I'm a poet, so it's literally dreaming, but still, you know, like I want this kind of recognition. I want this kind of recognition. And I think volume is the way to get this recognition. And then he hates his life. He's unhappy. He's still searching for something. He's, you know, very unsatisfied. He doesn't even notice all of the good things around him. He self-sabotages his life. I'm like, you know what? If I'm just not even going to accept the success when it comes, then you know what? I don't need it. I need to find out what I really want. Because I would hate to live my entire life chasing after something, and then when I get it, I still am just significantly miserable. I would hate that. So instead, I need to focus on what it is that'll make me happy today and what'll make me happy in the future that I will be proud of to say that I did. And that's just how that's manifested.
I personally think that more people should watch BoJack Horseman for the exact reasons that you just said.
Yeah, I agree. I think anyone who can stand it should watch it. And if you can't stand it, I mean, watch it until you can't stand it. Like, it's so valuable because, you know, ultimately, you know, everybody's got their shit, essentially, right? Like, everyone's going through things. And I think that the show, you know, really address, like, you know, fundamentally, what is happiness and why do almost none of these people have it? And it's because they say they want something that they don't actually want. And, you know, it's a lot of time and energy to chase after something that you actually don't want. And it's a great life lesson, and they do it so well. It's very well written. It's funny. It's emotional. I love it. I love the show. It ending was one of the saddest and most necessary moments of my recent life. So yeah, I can't recommend it enough either, honestly.
And I think that more shows need to have that attitude of ending a show when it's still in its prime, as opposed to, you know, letting it go until it dies an unnatural death.
Yeah, I think that would be getting back into money, maybe. But honestly, I don't know. I'm not that high up in the in the writing world to know, you know. But yeah, we all know, we can all think of like at least 5 shows, and I'm being very, very like generous here towards Hollywood when I say that, that have ended well after everybody wanted them to. And yeah, it sucks, you know, because everyone deserves to be able to move on. and that's okay. And that's something that we just seem very, very resistant to, even in entertainment, right? Like, how long can this go on? I've even seen series that I feel like this could have been a movie. I don't need
yeah,
8-hour-long episodes of this.
Yes. one of my favorite shows recently has been Psych, because they switch from the series to a movie and it allows them to explore the characters in that hour and a half length, and then they're done.
Nice. Yeah. I think for a lot of shows, that's a good way to do it. I'm sorry. I'm just reflecting on all of my horrible viewing choices now. And I'm like, wow, I've wasted a lot of my life. I mean, but it's all good fun. Like, everything has its purposes, right? Sometimes you just want something in the background, and that you don't even really need to pay attention at this point. And then, some things they make you cry when they end because you knew this needed to happen and you didn't want it. And yeah, I think that's a good way to kind of think of things too,
So in your book, in your collection of poetry, in your collection of poems, is there a moment or a poem that just every time you read it, you're like, wow, I was tapped into something I didn't realize?
Honestly, a lot of them. And that's just because the way that I think about them, I use personas a lot. And that requires that sort of, really looking in and trying to feel like, what did this person feel like back then? Or how would this look or feel if I was, this person in this situation? And I have to find, some little nugget of understanding, right? Some little, just something I can relate to in some capacity, even indirectly. Like cleaning up men's messes, for example, is kind of written in this voice of an older woman, an older Black woman who's, cleaning up her house in the midst of, the civil rights era, with these, dangers to her loved ones and her life and her home. And, it's like, I have to find, okay, I'm not as old as this person. I don't have children. I don't have a husband. I'm not really big on housekeeping. So, what can I tap into to create this poem and make this poem, believable? And, that's what kind of comes in, that feeling of wanting to hate, essentially wanting to be mad, wanting to lash out because you're hurt and because you're frustrated. This is something that I can feel and that I can have in common with this woman, despite, all of the things that I don't have in common. And, I'm not sure if that was necessarily the tapping into that you were referring to, but that's just something that I do in quite a few poems, just trying to find, what is that emotion or what is that feeling that I can find in the life of this person who's in a different generation or different situation, and can I bring that out in a poem?
Wow, more people need to be writing poems, because think of all the things we could learn from taking that perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of poets are doing this to some degree, right? Like, trying to convey emotion is a big part of poetry, if not what poetry is all about. Being able to connect folks across, different images, across different settings, across different eras, using different sounds, you know, what are all the ways we can conjure up emotion out of you? And it's cathartic, right? It's rejuvenating. It's refreshing. It can be liberating, affirming. You know, these are all the things that I think poetry are very, very good at doing on such a, you know, with such a focused and unassuming, you know, appearance. I think that's what makes poetry intimidating to some people. First, you have to understand it. I think that's one thing for a lot of folks is like, what are they even talking about? But then once you understand it, it just like smacks you in the face. And it's like, whoa, like you just, now I have to process things, you know, and you have to be a person who enjoys that revelatory experience to enjoy poetry.
Well, Ashanti, as we wrap up our time together, what's one thing you want listeners to take away from our conversation today?
I think that if anything you heard resonated with you, definitely pick up a copy of Black Under if you haven't stolen your friend's copy already, and let me know what you think. I love talking poetry and talking to poets, talking to poetry lovers about my work, about other people's work. And, you know, I try to keep those lines of communication open because I'm big on, you know, that community aspect of the literary world. So definitely feel free to reach out, and thanks for listening.
Awesome. Well, final question for you. What book, podcast, or resource is currently blowing your mind right now?
The 1619 Project, which is a curated selection of articles, essays, poems, really exploring the different facets of America and explaining how profoundly the institution of slavery impacted those different institutions. So its effects on healthcare, its effects on capitalism, its effects on so many different areas of American life that can be attributed to slavery and the people who were migrated here forcibly, forced into this institution. It's just very eye-opening, not necessarily because I didn't know these things, of course, growing up as a Black person, but just very well done, very thorough without being a textbook, and really breaks down, you know, like if there's any place that you thought was safe from racism, like there isn't. A lot of this has been going on and has been in the making since the 1600s. And, you know, it's before us. It's not personal. You know, it's not personal. It only becomes personal when you adamantly refuse to recognize that things need to change from the way they were 400 years ago. You know, so it's very good. I recommend it to people all the time. And yeah, it absolutely blows my mind.
Be sure to head to gwtw.co/581 to find the link to Ashanti's website where you can purchase her poetry collection, Black Under. It is a short yet powerful read and well worth your time and attention. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.